blessings. Told me ain't no flexing on me. My attorney gon' call and collect. Blessings on blessings for me. My successes only made them envious. They got upset. I had to put all their egos in check. I want the money,
well,
the power, respect, and I
heard back.
You know so-and-so, you're not a threat, because I really know so-and-so, they like my family, so they
back on the podcast board.
Getting good at my flow, been like butter, my checking them
bank. This is a tough one.
All of my haters feel one in two ways. Really upset that they show some respect.
What's happening, everybody? This is Simon, Closed Network Privacy and Security Podcast, episode number 46. Working title is, what is my working title? I was initially thinking about not perfect, but good enough. Be your own algorithm. I feel like it's relevant enough. I got a ton of stuff on my desk. I am not prepared to do this. But I was talking to our moderators, our helpers, Mattis Max on Intelligence 7. I was like, I'm going to try to pull this off tonight. And they know what's been going on with me lately. So they were like, all right, man, well, just it feels good. And it does. But man, has it been a brutal couple months? So yeah, I haven't put out an episode since I did the remote recording from the woods, episode 45. And yeah, I have had a lot going on personally in our family life. Our immediate family suffered a great loss, and I won't go into details on it, but there's just been a lot of things that have just been really hard, and having to navigate through a lot of the side effects of that. And yeah, it's been a lot on my family. And yeah, I have also I've taken on some new projects, and I'm actually taking on some more professionally. And I'll be traveling next week for work. I'll be out of town. And I wanted to at least get a podcast episode. I've actually had a couple of podcasts written down in my notes. And I use the Notes Nook app as of late for simplicity reasons. And going through all the show notes I've put together. And I'm like, all right, I've got a lot here. I've got a lot of things to say. My mindset just hasn't really been there. And it probably really isn't. And I'm okay with that. And I just wanted to get something out, because I know what it's like when you get connected with a group, whether it's in a forum or a group of friends or whatever, and then things start to fizzle out. And I feel like that's what we have. Our community is awesome. And I just wanted to get an episode out that was kind of like a check-in and talk about some stuff and not get too in the weeds and what's going on with me personally. But I know a lot of people go through these types of things, and it kind of puts you in a numb state and emotional state and things of that nature. And so you're just kind of off your game, so to speak. And that's kind of how I felt, just going through the motions in life. But you know, it's hard. So some of the things that aren't the immediate get pushed to the back burner. And for me, the podcast is really important. And that's why I decided, I was like, no, I really want to take some time and just at least get episode 46 out there. I've had some things on my mind. There's some things I want to talk about, and also just have a check-in with you all. And I hope you're all doing well. I hope this episode finds you well wherever you are. This is recorded Friday night, late July 25th. Normally I get that out in the intro. I've got my notes together. I might seem a little rusty because it's been like 2 months since I've put out that episode 45, which was a lot of fun. And I want to do more of that. And I've been wanting to get people on the podcast. People have reached out to me and said they're welcome to, you know, they're open to coming on and talking about their journey and their experiences with how they've ended up here in this space of caring so much about their privacy and their data and things of that nature, and trying to create a better workflow that secures their digital life and makes them more aware of what they're doing in the world, what information they're giving out. And I think that's awesome, because that's really at the end, that's what I'm trying to accomplish with all of this, is trying to connect with like-minded individuals, number one, because it's kind of difficult to have conversations without sounding like a crazy person or people giving you the typical canned responses of like, well, why do you care so much? Why does that matter? You're not doing anything bad, right? That generic kind of uneducated response whenever you start talking about, you know, using methods or software or hardware to shield your exposure to data collection, whether it's from your internet provider, whether it's from social media or email providers, companies that are buying and selling our data all the time. And, you know, you have to care. At the end of it, you can't convince anyone that doesn't care. And so you can try to, you know, speak your truth or whatever you want to call it to all of this. And this oftentimes is just kind of a hard approach. So if you're here, I'm happy you're here. If you're listening, I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me babble into a microphone for an hour, hour and a half, or however long these episodes typically go for. I usually do a rundown of what I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to try to stick to that, but I may drift a little bit here and there. And there's a couple funny stories, not funny, haha, but kind of funny stories. One particular that just came out, today, actually. And so I'll be talking about that. So I do want to talk about an experience that I had twice in the last month and a half where I was actually targeted to be social engineered. And it kind of caught me. I mean, I had my guard up, but it felt almost like maybe this could be real, but I know better than that. And so I want to share that experience with you because the way that they went about doing it was actually quite elaborate and really like threw me off. So I'm going to talk about that. That was regarding hacking into one of my Gmail accounts. So I'm going to share that story as I'm looking at my notes over here. Let me move it to my other monitor because my vision, I got to get an eye exam here pretty soon. My glasses, my prescription is just off both my contacts and whatnot, so I cannot read. So I'm going to kind of go into that. I'm also going to talk a little bit about taking back ownership. And I did this with Audible content. Audible is a service provided by Amazon, which basically has ebooks, I guess. Is that the right word? Audiobooks. And how you can actually download those and keep them. Because if you've paid for those, they're yours. And so I'm just going to talk about that. I'm going to also mention a couple pro tips that were mentioned in our chat. One by Some Ordinary Guy and also Fresh Ferocity that I thought were helpful. Some GrapheneOS updates that I think are kind of really helpful for compartmentalization. Maybe I'll get into some other news I think some of it's just kind of old now, like the Google Next Cloud situation, the Coinbase data breach, which is, I think, where one of my pieces of data was correlated to target my Google account. So that's why that was kind of relevant. And then there's also some cool file. I'm trying to do this whole, like, you know, mention a cool app or something that might be helpful for those to use. So I was going to talk about that and then also one of the stories that made me laugh today. But I mean, it's kind of sad, but it's at the same time, it kind of lends itself to why I always say feed everything with information that isn't yours and won't type back to you. So yeah, that's kind of a little bit about where I'm at and what I was going to talk about in this episode. It might be kind of short and sweet, but I wanted to have an episode pop up in the feeds and kind of check in with everybody. And yeah, let's kick it off. I want to give a quick shout out as this podcast is sponsored by you, all, you and me. It's self-fulfilled and we don't do any external sponsors. There's no external forces that influence me and what I talk about or what applications I like to mention or anything like that. Everything is wholesome in that regard. And I find it harder and harder to find creators that are not pushing some sort of product or service because, you know, and I noticed that lately too, a lot of them are like Incogni and Delete Me and these things. There's a lot of privacy that's being put out there, but it's a lot of it's pseudo privacy. And so, you know, what we like to do here is we like to take a holistic approach to how you look at your life, how you structure, how you sign up for services and what information you give out, who you interact with and how you interact with. And I want to get a little bit into that as well in kind of my general conversation about being your own algorithm, because AI is finding its way into everything. So I'm going to get into a little bit about that as well, and my thoughts and what I see, especially that I work in the marketing space professionally. That's what I do for a living. And so I'm very, very connected and aware of a lot of these different tools and applications that are being used, some for good, some for the funnies and the memes, and some for not good at all, and where that might lead us to down the road, and how you can be at least aware. So as you're making decisions on purchasing a new phone or laptop or things of that nature, what to be aware of when you're going down that road. So I just want to give a quick thank you to our Patreon supporters, Michael Bates, Richard G., Daniel J. Martin, TK, David, Mr. Milk Mustache, Hutch, CC, our lightning boosters, Bon, some new ones that I hadn't seen, Base Potato, that's kind of a funny and cool name, some Alpha Byte characters, appreciate all of the love over the last few months and donations and keeping things going, supporting things like our servers, because we have a pretty good mix of different things. We have our discourse forum. That's where I post the show notes. So if you click on the link in the podcast notes, that will take you to the forum. That's where the show notes are. There's a lot of other information. I'm actually got some stuff to put up there as soon as I can structure some how-tos together. We have our Mastodon server, which actually runs on site in my basement. And we also have like the website, and we have our Matrix chat rooms, and there's just infrastructure that these things really go to help pay for and support, like buying the server for Mastodon and buying hardware and microphones and all that kind of fun stuff. So, you know, the podcast is doing okay, and I really appreciate the support. And if you can't support, that's okay. If it's not your jam, this will always be a free and open place where you can consume content that I put out for free, whether you're paid or not. And it pretty much, I mean, I put some stuff on the Patreon that's sometimes behind the scenes or a little bit here and there, and I've been meaning to do more, but I've just had a lot going on in the last couple of months. But that's my intent with that. Patreon may not be what I use long term, but it's what I have now, because I think a lot of people are familiar with it, and it's a low bar for those that are contributing on Lightning. They usually do it through podcasting 2.0 apps. And you can load up some sats, some Bitcoin, and stream to your favorite creators. So I really appreciate all that support. And I want to give a thank you to Mattis Max and Unintelligent 7 for all their work and efforts and being active and welcoming people. If you want to join our Matrix chat rooms, you can do so. The easiest way is probably just to download and install the Element app, and then head over to closednetwork.io and click join the forum, and or, you know, the Matrix chat, and it'll take you right in there. And it's pretty active. We have a lot of good conversations. There's an off-topic channel as well where we share pretty much jokes and memes and that kind of stuff. As I go into the chat room, there's 370 people chilling in there in the troll room. So, I hope this finds you well. And I apologize for sounding scatterbrained and rushing through things a little bit. I feel a little out of sorts, and might be that way for a little bit of time, but I figured if I start back, then I will get back into my stride. And so where to start? Well, I think a good place to start is with this social engineering situation. So I think what I perceive happened was my data was found in a Coinbase breach, and connected to that was my Gmail account, which I actually haven't used Coinbase in probably 5+ years. You know, it wasn't really like on my radar. I do use unique passwords, password manager. I use two-factor authentication, either with the TOTP app, Aegis, or my YubiKeys. So, I mean, I'm pretty, you know, I have a workflow, and I practice really good security with that. But this is interesting. I got a call out of the blue, and it did show up as Google. Now, most people will hopefully know this, that Google, if you have like a regular Gmail account, Google will never call you, ever. But I had this number is a business line, and I do get calls from Google because I manage ad spends for clients. And I often have scheduled meetings, usually 30-minute sessions. If anyone's ever run AdWords campaigns, you're probably familiar with this. You get an email from your Google rep, you schedule a time, you pick it on the calendar, and they'll call you. And sometimes they'll call you if you've missed scheduling a meeting. And so those numbers usually show up from Mountain View, California. Well, this number that hit my phone was a Mountain View number. And it did say Google, but that could be spoofed. But being that it's normal for me to get calls from Google, I would say, I don't know, at least once a month, maybe sometimes twice a month, definitely once a quarter or a couple times a quarter for different accounts that I've managed or still manage. And so this isn't totally out of the blue for me to get a call from Google. And this person represented themselves from their legal department. And so I was like, interesting. So I asked for the guy's name, and he gave me his name. I quickly looked it up. There was a LinkedIn profile tied to this person that said they were in their legal department. Sure, that could be spoofed, but it was quite elaborate. And the first time he called, he said that someone was trying to access my Google account, saying that I had passed away. And I said, oh, okay, that's interesting. Because I'm talking to you, clearly I'm not passed away. I said, did they send you a death certificate? And he said, yes. And I said, who's the person that submitted this request to access my Google account? And he gave me a name that I'd never heard of before. And so, all the red flags are going off in the back of my head. And I'm kind of thinking, like, at first I thought he was talking about my Google Workspace account, which is a business account tied to this managed account for ads for a particular client. I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe this is true. But then I found out, then I asked him, I said, well, what Google account is this? You know, because again, I'm still thinking this is one of my work accounts. And he said, my Gmail. And I'm like, no, I don't think that this is, you know, but I'm kind of also wanting to keep him on and string him along a little bit and ask him, like, okay, so what's the move here? You can close this out because clearly I'm alive. I'm in my Google accounts right now and everything looks fine. I don't see anything that looks like someone was trying to get into my account or anything. And even on my personal Gmail account, I have those locked down with unique passwords, of course, and also using a YubiKey to access those accounts. So you have to have the physical key. So I'm thinking, like, there's no way anyone could get logged in. Well, he's like, I'm going to send an authorization. And once you click that, I can go ahead and close this case out. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm thinking he's going to email me something. I can click a link and do a digital sign to close this out. I'm still very skeptical, but this individual was well-spoken, sounded like he was American in the U.S. I looked up the LinkedIn profile and it kind of looked legitimate at first glance. And so I'm thinking to myself, like, man, is this legitimate? I mean, surely it's not. I mean, I'm a podcaster on this topic. Surely I could sniff this out, right? And I still had the gut check that was like, something's off here. This doesn't sound right. First of all, I know that Google's not going to call me regarding my personal Gmail account. They're very unresponsive with personal accounts anyway. And so I'm thinking, all right, so what are you going to do? And he sends the authorization and I get on my work phone, I get the Google multi-factor authentication pop-up. You might have experienced that if you use Google or Gmail, when you log in, it'll say, go to your device, click yes, this is me. And then you click the number that matches what you're seeing on the screen. And he tells me, press the number 88. And I'm thinking immediately, I'm like, no, this isn't happening. And so I start probing him and I say, why are you trying to get me to authorize a login remotely? Because the first time it logs, when it sends that prompt to your phone, This is like a passkey, like a multi-factor authentication passkey. It shows you the location of where they're at. And when it popped up, it was on the East Coast. I believe it was New York. And I'm like, if you're in California, why would it pop up? Like, if Google was sending this to me, I was like, why would it come from New York? Then he did it again, and it popped up from Atlanta. I'm like, this isn't making any sense, and I'm questioning him. I'm like, dude, I'm not going to click on any of this stuff. You're not. We're stopping right here. And then he got belligerent and hung up on me. And then he actually tried the same trick about a week or two later. I believe it was the same guy. And I immediately was like, dude, I'm not doing this, you know. And he hung up, and I haven't heard from him since. So I actually called Google. You can actually call Google, and you can submit a ticket, and you can request a call. And they did call me, and I explained this because I wanted them to know what was going on, because I saw this as a big security breach within their system. Because I'm like thinking, this guy doesn't have my password. How did he get to the point where he was trying to log in? And so when I talked to the Google rep, I'm explaining this to her, and she's like, thank you for calling. Thanks for letting us know. Yes, we would never call you. You're right about all your assumptions. Like, everything's, she goes, but this is pretty in depth. I gave her all the information. Like, this is the guy he's pretending to be, says he's calling from the legal department, and so on and so forth. So I'm talking to my brother-in-law, and who works in internet security, and he is he's a director admin for a pretty large company. And I'm talking, they do a lot of training, and they hire companies to try to like hack them and stuff. And they do a lot of training with their employees, you know, what to look out for in emails and this and that and the other. And I'm explaining it to him, and he's like, man, that is crazy. And so I'm like, how did he get to the point? Because, you know, if you go to Gmail and you try to log in, you can put in the email address, but it wants the password. Well, if you download an app, let's say like the YouTube app, or I think even the Gmail app, like on a phone, there is an option, and I actually was able to do it to myself. I grabbed another Pixel device, download Gmail in a container, and was like, let me see if I can try to figure out how he did this. And so there's an option that when you download an app, you can log in and you can put in the Gmail account, and it gets to the password, and you can actually say, try another way. And what that does is it bypasses the password security and will automatically move to a multi-factor authentication request, sending it to another device. I think Google does this so if people are trying to log into their Google account and they can't remember their password, they can authorize the login for the device they are logged in on, because that's like a trusted air quote passkey. Apple does this too, with like Face ID or passcode. Everyone's trying to move to passkeys, which, you know, okay, there's a lot of benefit security-wise, but it also does need to log you into that passkey of the ecosystem, which I think I like to be independent with my technology, with how I log in. And that's why I like these hardware keys or a third-party two-factor authentication app. There's a lot of different ones out there. I use Aegis. I've just used it for a long time. It works well for me. It's very exportable. So I don't really use anyone's pass keys for logging into stuff. Even with my professional work Google Workspace accounts, I have them tied to two YubiKeys. So I have two for work, I have two for personal, and then I have backups in secure location. So if I ever lose them, you know, I can still get to my stuff. And this was bypassed all of that. It bypassed my password, it bypassed my YubiKey, and I even logged into my Google account. So I'm like, what? How is this easy? Because someone could easily be social engineered into like believing that they're talking to the person that they say they are, and then go ahead and authorize the login from a device that they're already currently logged in on, probably their phone, especially if they're an Android phone, a standard Android phone. When you first set up your phone, you're logging in with your Google account. So of course you'd be logged into that. You'd be logged into Gmail and all the Google services just from the beginning setup of your phone. And so I wanted to share that experience, because this was a new one for me that I had never seen or caught before. And it took me back. Like, how could this be so easily bypassed? No password, no YubiKey. And it just goes to show that with all these different methods that companies are trying to use to mitigate really technical support volumes by moving to passkeys. Well, I get it, but that can also create these new social engineering methods that actually make it a lot easier. Now, it's targeted, right? You have to do this one-on-one. You have to be picked out. You have to be called. You have to answer, right? There's a more work and an effort involved. But maybe this guy was like, well, this guy had a Coinbase, you know, I have his Gmail. I see it in here. And I still went on. I disabled the multi-factor or the passkey on my Google account. I changed my password again. I verified that my YubiKeys were still active, which they were. Logged out of everything because, you know, when you log in your Google account, you can see, like, show me all the areas I'm logged in. So I went through all the security measures that you would normally want to double check to make sure. But yeah, it was pretty wild. And I start thinking about this kind of stuff, and I'm really not really sure how people are going to safeguard themselves, especially now that AI is becoming a de facto default enabled service on all the new operating systems that are being updated with Android 16, with Apple Intelligence on iOS devices by default now as of, I think, 18.4, and definitely in iOS 26. By default, Apple Intelligence is on, and it's scanning for all apps. So if you use an iPhone and you're on a new version like the 18.5, I've actually got one of my work devices. I'm even looking at iOS 26. And you have the developer beta, installed all four, just so I can be aware of like what's coming and how does this stuff work. And it kind of really, it opened my eyes because we talk about. Within our chats and all this different stuff, we talk about all these different ways to have secure, encrypted communications, right? Our communications are really important to all of us, and we want to ensure that what we say one-on-one or in a group chat stays within that group chat or stays within that one-to-one communique. But by default, on an iOS device with Apple Intelligence enabled, if you go into your settings and you go to Apple Intelligence and at the bottom you click on apps, the toggle switch will be on for every single application, including Signal, including WhatsApp, including any Threema, Session, whatever you have running. So you might think that by using that app on your phone, you have end-to-end encrypted communications with whoever you're talking to, but the AI is actually reading that message on device within the app so it can do things like summarize your messages for your notifications on your home screen and give relevant context to queries to your device. Well, that circumvents any and all reason to have encrypted communication, in my opinion. And second to this, if you turn it off, right, you can turn it off, and if you trust the toggle switch, you know, I don't know, it turns itself back on oftentimes when you update to the newest release. And this is on Android, stock Android, and even when I say stock Android, I kind of mean OEM Android. So your Pixels, your Samsungs, your OnePlus devices, all of those, right, that are running Google Gemini or have this running on the device. If you're on iOS, it's running through Apple Intelligence. I won't even get into Microsoft and Copilot and all that stuff. I don't run any Microsoft, so I don't even know. I haven't actually looked at it, but I've seen enough YouTube videos to know that it's just going from bad to worse. And so even if you turn it off on your side, you know, you need to make sure whoever you're communicating with is also disabling these AI features for those apps on their side, because their messages can still be indexed. So you may think, okay, well, I turned it off, so I'm good. Well, not necessarily, because everyone you're talking to, family, friends, coworkers, whatever, might have all this stuff on, and you think like, oh, our conversations are in and encrypted. And they're not. I mean, they're not. They're encrypted as far as the internet's concerned. And a lot of people will say, oh, well, iMessage uses end-to-end encryption and it signals. Yeah, but if the AI is running locally and indexing all of this so that it can provide context as an assistant to you, then you don't. I mean, these are basically, this is the backdoor to surveillance. There, you know, it's not corporate surveillance and government surveillance, yeah, that's still all a huge factor. But now it's just, now the phone is doing it. And going forward, this is kind of just a general theme now. Almost every app, from all the Meta apps with Facebook and Instagram, the Meta AI is running and all there. So even though you say, like, okay, well, my conversations are encrypted and blah, 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 and WhatsApp isn't, it's like, well, first of all, yeah, maybe the communication is encrypted, but there's so much metadata that's collected, number one, that can be very problematic. But number two is now the company, whoever is hosting, you know, your AI, is also privy to this. And I don't believe in any of this private compute class. Apple is so far behind the AI curve that they're just scrambling to get something out that they can continue selling their user base. Google's pretty far ahead. Then you have other, you know, AI agent or AI tools like, you know, Perplexity, Anthropic, you know, Claude AI, and different tools, different brands out there that are trying to shoehorn their AI models into every nook and cranny. And this stuff isn't even really that good yet. And now it's like they're trying to make it a standard and becoming your assistant, right? So what does an assistant need, right? If you think about it, if you've ever had an assistant in a professional environment or someone that helped you with something, what do they need? They need as much information as possible to assist you, right? Your normal assistant in a corporate environment is going to have access to your email, your phones, your calendar, your communications, so that they can help be a second version of you and assisting you. And that's what this is on a digital level, but it's like, it's just everything. It's just, we're just going to scoop everything we can and send it on back home, back to wherever it's going. So I just kind of wanted to step through this because there's so much more now that we don't even know what will be problematic in the future if you have all this stuff turned on. We've seen the fumbles with Microsoft with Copilot AI, with Windows Recall on their Surface machines and stuff like that, or they're the ones that are compatible with that. And then we're also seeing a big change. Windows 10 is being sunsetted for support, I believe, in a couple of months. So there's a push to Windows 11, which all this stuff gets harder and harder to opt out of. And it's basically an operating system that's just adware at this point. And so we're seeing a shift with a lot of influencers, at least I am. Big personalities like PewDiePie on YouTube. I think he's like the third or fourth biggest YouTube channel out there. Completely ditching Google, moving to GrapheneOS, moving to Linux, and embracing self-hosting. And that's the whole concept. You can run your own AI locally. You can run your own LLMs. Check out the Hated One's most recent video where he talks about this. He actually has a fantastic video on AI. I'll actually put a link to it in the show notes. And it's, you know, it's a powerful tool that can be very beneficial, right? I'm not trying to poo-poo on all LLMs, but if you're not running the LLM, then you're just the product to somebody else. And they go read the terms of use for OpenAI's ChatGPT. They basically tell you that, yeah, we can do what we want with your data. We can use it to train our model, and we can keep it forever. I mean, it is their data. It's their server that you're using. So when you're uploading your personal documents and asking it to summarize or do statistical analysis on your budgets or, you know, whatever, you're giving them all that information, and they have that much more information on you. And it's, especially if you have a paid account, you've already, you know, kind of like KYC'd yourself. They know you are who you are based upon your credit card information. And so they can definitively say, with probably high likelihood, that this is the person, and these people are just feeding it. And ChatGPT is the default on iPhone. And so, you know, that's all tied in. How they're managing, you know, what they're doing with that data, who knows? Who knows? You know, and if you're using AI in a way that's like, hey, convert this from metric to standard or centimeters to inches and stuff, I mean, it's kind of benign, but it's still able to create profiles on you. And so There are some tools out there that I've kind of experimented with, but I don't know how much I trust them. One is Venice.ai. It's not an endorsement, but basically there are privacy kind of, well, at least they're selling that, is like you can sign up and they do the queries on your behalf. I don't really know how much to trust those types of things. Sometimes those could be just elaborate honeypots, if nothing else. I think that the best way to do it is to, use as much pseudo anonymous, information as possible. Use a VPN, not give it any personal information. Use a masked way to pay for the service that doesn't tie back to a true identity, whether that's through Cloaked or MySudo or privacy.com. If you're in the US, there's a lot of these options available. Yes, you're trusting a different entity with that information, but you're kind of trying to break the chain of the identity is what we're trying to do here. So, or if you have a decent machine with a decent graphics card, probably NVIDIA, and you can even pick up older, 2080 cards, 1080 Ti cards, for on the cheap that do really well with local language models that you can run locally on your machine, and you can feel confident, in that, because whether you're running a Llama or number of different tools to make have this environment for yourself. You can run Wireshark. You can close access to the internet. You can close it off by your network. Whatever you want to do, you can just unplug the network card or turn off your Wi-Fi, unplug the Ethernet cable to know that you're running these models locally. They take a little bit more time to set up, but you could set up a reverse proxy and run Open Web UI and still have your own private AI chatbot. And that's what I've been doing for quite a long time now, and I really enjoy that, to still get benefits of some of these things, because they are helpful. It can be very, very helpful. But just be careful what you're feeding it, because this data just ends up who knows where, just kind of all over the place. So, that was kind of what I've been observing and experiencing with friends and family, with AI is a big hype. And I'm like, just be careful with what you're doing with this stuff, because you never know where it's going to end up or how it will be used down the road. There's no telling. It's just the latest, greatest, shiny thing, and everyone wants to play with it and be proficient with it. And there's a lot of cool stuff that with AI, like Veo 3 is really neat. I've been playing around with that with Google, and the whole image to video stuff and prompt to video, prompt to images, and it's cool. It's a neat tech, but it could come with some trade-offs that you may not actually really want to be subscribed to within the terms of use. So, anyways, I'd love to hear people's thoughts and opinions about, where all this is going, because it kind of leaves me back to where I've been all along, which is the self-hosting route. And I am even more committed to that journey than ever before, and working on setting up different environments for myself, both for work and for personal use, because I don't want client data and being vulnerable either. So I have separate environment set up for my business stuff and then for my personal stuff. And it's cool. It's fun. It's fun to learn and set these things up. And it's getting a lot easier too. Docker has really kind of streamlined the process for standing up services and keeping them really easy to maintain and update and be portable, as well as backup with things like Duplicati. That's what I've been using. But there's other things out there that you can use to kind of back things up, and because you have to take on that responsibility if you're going to self-host, especially if you're hosting and managing for friends or family members. This is important data, and you need to have a good environment or a good workflow to kind of keep things backed up, and both locally and off-site. So, yeah, I on the computer front, seems like Linux is the way to go. I actually have, on my desktop, my big desktop, I wanted to kind of understand from like newcomers' perspective. Yes, I'm a big fan of Arch Linux. I've run other distributions, but I kind of was like, I'm gonna blow out Arch on my main desktop, on my main machine, and install Linux Mint. and, you know, just use it as, and kind of try to use it as someone who maybe wouldn't be very comfortable with the command line. I'm going to try to use the graphical user interface as much as possible. And I got to tell you, it's pretty nice. It's a great experience. Even installing games through Steam and Lutris and, you know, kind of just, I'm not even modding it. I'm not ricing out the desktop or anything. I'm just kind of using it, basic vanilla install. And it's very good. I've actually moved my mom over to Linux Mint probably about a year and a half ago. I had her on Pop! OS before that. We had some issues. And, you know, it's the son. I'm always like, oh, man, if I do this, I'm probably going to get all sorts of tech-related calls, technical support calls, right? And once we got her set up and we got all her stuff connected to Nextcloud and she has NT photos for her on her Graphene OS phone to back up all her photos, she can access it on her Linux machine. I don't really hear from her. She's doing just fine. She actually, we just upgraded her phone about 2 weeks ago. So she's on a Pixel 9 now. And we moved over from her older Pixel 7. And because everything is on Nextcloud and she uses NT photos and stuff like that, it was actually a pretty smooth transition. And we had her up and running within about an hour, hour and a half. And she's, again, I haven't heard from her since. So I assume everything's, going well. And this is someone who's smart, intelligent, but she's not a tech nerd. She doesn't, you know, she doesn't want to know how to use a command line, but she's been using Linux Mint just fine. And she loves knowing that she's not feeding all her data to some corporation and paying subscription fees and all that other fun stuff that really, that's what operating systems are these days. Whether it's iOS, Android, macOS, whatever, they're just platforms to be basically subscription avenues is really what it seems to be more than anything else. And so hosting your own media, you know, running your own Plex server or Jellyfin, you know, and ripping your movies and ripping your CDs and using PlexAmp, right? I have PlexAmp installed. So I have a vast music library as I'm tangenting all over the place. I've ripped a lot of my CDs and uncompressed audio, uncompressed FLAC. And I use a dongle, a DAC, digital audio converter. It's like a USB-C digital audio converter. Then I plug in like my nice open back headphones and I listen to my music via PlexAmp no matter where I am. And it sounds so good. It sounds so good. And I love that there's no record of what I'm listening to, what playlists I have. It's all my music. It's all my data. And I know there might be some people out there going, well, there might be some metadata with Plex. You're right. There probably is. But I mean, as far as, you know, Spotify and Apple Music and Deezer, these are all fine services, but, you know, they do collect a lot of information about you and they cost money. And I'm not against spending money. I'd rather buy albums directly from artists or from sites where the artists get a larger portion of the money than I would pay a subscription service. So it's a little bit harder route. And yes, I do have some streaming services, but I'm in this transition where I want to move more and more towards the majority of my data is self-contained. It's under my domain. It's under my purview. And so I really encourage you to maybe start experimenting, right? If you have an older laptop that's sitting in the closet, especially since it probably, if it's older, it may not be compatible to run Windows 11. So what are you going to do with it? You know, you're going to have all these boat anchors sitting around. This is a great time to install Linux, install Ubuntu server, install Ubuntu desktop even, really. So if you are you know, just want to get familiar, install Docker, maybe put Portainer on there or install Casa OS, which is just one script. And then it's all managed through the web interface. It's a web app. And you can set up your own services and you can install Nextcloud and you can kind of start experimenting with this. And I encourage you to experiment in whatever free time you have and get familiar. If nothing else, just to have some sort of a plan that you can move to once you've decided, okay, that's it, I'm done. I'm moving out of Google. I'm moving out of Apple. And I like seeing these big creators going down this pathway and really kind of bringing to light how important it is to be in control of your information and your photos and your messages and your documents and all that stuff. And it used to be harder. It used to be harder to do these kinds of things, and it's gotten so much better, so much easier. Support your favorite FOSS apps. Donate to these projects. A lot of them are just developers giving their free time to making improvements or building functionality in these open source applications. LibreOffice, fantastic project. You know, donate to your favorite Linux distribution. Just donate what you can if you can. And I know not everybody can, but when you're able to, that's how you keep these things going. You can either pay the big tech companies, or you can, you know, find alternatives and support them. And sometimes supporting them is just contributing by filing a bug report if you have one, or something of that nature. Obviously, donating is great, or being an advocate and sharing the information and to friends and family. So anyways, I just feel like we're at that tipping point where, you know, you're going to have to decide at some point what avenue you're going to go down and what you're willing to give up or learn. And I can't answer that for you. Everyone's got their own limitations or time constraints, understandable. But one thing, I will mention this, and this wasn't even on my topic list, is find people locally. I have actually just attended my first nerd group where I live. For those that don't know, I'm an avid runner, and I am part of a run club. I've been part of a run club for about a year and a couple of months. And I met one of the guys there recently. I'd say, well, you know, in the last 4 or 5 months, and we've been talking, and some of us sometimes hang out after run club because we meet up at a brewery. We do a 5K and come back and just, you know, have a beer and just start chatting, whatever. And we got to talking, and I was like, man, this is awesome. And he says, oh, I should invite you to my new nerd group. I can't remember exactly how he phrased it, but in our Matrix chat, it's called the nerd chat, nerd group. And he invited me over to his house. It was a half a dozen of us, I think maybe even 7 or 8 people, who some of them are BSD developers, Meshtastic people, Linux people, open source people. And it was so refreshing to hang out in person and socialize with people that were like-minded. Politics, not a topic of conversation. Religion, not a topic of conversation. Just all tech. A little bit of cryptocurrency stuff and self-hosting and, you know, environments. Oh, you're running NixOS with Hyperland. Cool. You know, this and that. Oh, what do you do for this? What do you do for that? A lot of networking talk. And, you know, it never dawned on me to mention this, and even myself, was that there are a lot of local groups and makerspaces and Linux user groups, even cryptocurrency groups, stuff like that, which those can be kind of sketchy. So just, you know, take that with a grain of salt. But there are actually, if you live in a decent populace, chances are there's people that want to share and talk and exchange ideas. And it's a great way to get some help and ask some questions or see if someone can help you out. So one of the things that we've decided to do was within the area that we live, we're going to set up our own Meshtastic network. And this is cool because this is something I've been wanting to do for a very long time. But I kind of felt like, well, if I set it up, like, what do I do? Like, if I set up my Meshtastic node and I have my Meshtastic radio, like, how do I meet people to talk to you? Like, you know, I mean, sure, there's like Meshtastic groups and Reddit subreddits and forums and things of that nature. But this is even better because these people are like in my city and they can help me set up my devices and configure them and test them out. And I can set up nodes and we can try to build our own network out. So that's new and that's cool. And I'm like, why have I never really thought about that? I've been part of Linux user groups or lugs in the past. I've done stuff like that, but it's not ever really always occurred to me to try to find people near me. And I just want to encourage you to, like, if you're feeling like a little timid to like do stuff on your own, just find some people, reach out to some people, you know, where, you know, just do some searches online, where, you know, within your local area that might, there might be a makerspace or a hackerspace or a group of people that gets together every couple of weeks or once a month and talks about different topics. Maybe sometimes people, I've already been asked to put a presentation together. I don't even know when or where, but I asked if I would be interested in presenting to another or group through this friend. And I'm like, well, yeah, sure. You know, I would love to. Plus, it's a great way to network and meet other people that, again, who are trying to achieve the same things that I am. So yeah, do that, because it's awesome. It's so cool. And now we're in a matrix. We have a couple of matrix rooms that we're in talking about this as we're working through this Meshtastic project, together, and we're going to meet up, and this is what everyone should bring, and we're going to make sure everyone gets set up and configured right. And this is new for me. I mean, I get it. I understand the project and understand the basics of LoRa and all that kind of stuff, but I've not actually done it. So, you know, I know that when I say, hey, just set up, you know, set up a server, blah, blah, blah. And I know that that can be kind of like, well, how do I do that? Where do I start? Yeah, there's a lot of YouTube tutorials and stuff, and that's probably where I would start, is from other people online. But also see if you can connect with people in real life. It's also good for the soul. It's good for the mind, and it kind of helps make you not feel like you're the only one that thinks the way you do. And why, you know, the things that you want to achieve are not abnormal. They're not, they're very normal. So, that's my encouragement. I want to jump into, did I mention the project? Oh yeah. I kind of glossed over. Okay. I want to talk about the Audible thing real quick. So, I wanted to find a way to download and have my Audible books that I've paid for over the years. And I'm like, I want to be able to have these things. So there is, looking at my notes, there is an app called Libation, Libation. And you can, it's a free and open source app, and it's basically to manage your Audible books. And it's supported on Windows, Linux, Mac OS. So you can import your library from Audible, including the cover art. You can download and remove the DRM from the books. You can even download any accompanying PDFs for the book. You can tag the books and organize them within Libation. And it has a really nice advanced search built on, what is it? I think it's the Lucene search engine. Is that how I say it? Lucene. You can... filter and search stuff, and it supports the US, UK, Canada, Germany, France, Australia, Japan, India, and Spain. It might even be further than that, but when I was researching it and using it, those are the countries where it definitely, or the regions where it definitely said it supported. It might support more than that. So I don't know if you use Audible or if it had Audible subscriptions in the past, but yeah, it's pretty awesome, and I downloaded all the books I wanted, and it's great. One of the FOSS apps I wanted to mention that I've been using on Linux is Flameshot, and it's actually available on Windows, Mac, and Linux, but it is a really cool screenshot tool, and it's free and open source. It actually, let me just double check, I think, yeah, it has GitHub, there's a Mastodon and a Matrix channel. So the website is just flameshot.org. O-R-G. It has some sponsors. The project has some pretty decent sponsors like Namecheap, SignPath, Addy.io, and some others. So pretty well-supported, funded project. It has a command line interface, which is awesome for you super nerds out there. It also has the ability to upload the screenshots directly to the cloud if you want, or put it directly on Imgur. So if you just want to like screenshot something and directly upload it to Imgur to have a link, if you're posting it, say like on a forum, maybe our forum, any other forum, it's just really intuitive. It has like in-app screenshot editing. So you can like basically put in your markup, you know, arrow, highlight stuff, blur something. So if you're writing up tutorials or maybe putting some documentation together and you need to blur out, say, like an API key or something like that, but you're showing like an example of how to do something, you can really easily you know, highlight stuff, put rectangles and shapes and borders and all that kind of thing in. And I'm used to using Preview on Mac OS, which has a really nice markup tool. And I was looking for an alternative that just allows me to very easily screenshot something, do my markup, and then save it or upload it. And holy crap. Did I say holy cow and holy crap at the same time? And it came out holy crap. I don't know, whatever. So it's a GPL licensed application. And yeah, Flameshot, pretty cool. So that's my FOSS app recommendation for this episode. I'm not going to get into a couple of the other stories I mentioned earlier because I wanted to talk about this one that popped up on my radar today. But I will have links in the show notes to the articles I had mentioned before, both about GrapheneOS adding storage scopes and contact scopes as a replacement for granting the contact permissions, and also various other storage media permissions. So they'll have similar features planned for the camera, microphone, and location as well. And Android has global mock location, but want per app feature. So GrapheneOS is making some really cool additions into the contact scopes and permissions for storage and media permissions. So that's really cool. I still I'm a little kind of concerned long term for not just like GrapheneOS, but all custom ROM projects like Calyx OS and stuff as Google gets more locked down with their closing branch access to non OEMs. So meaning that if you're not an OEM, you're not a phone manufacturer, you don't get access to the incremental branch updates. Google is only making the full Android AOSP releases available as available to non OEMs. So an OEM is just, you know, your Samsung and you know OnePlus, that kind of thing, phone makers. So since Calyx OS, GrapheneOS, these are not phone makers, they're just custom ROM development teams. They don't have branch access to the development branches of Android of and also too, from what I understand, they're having to do some more reverse engineering on the drivers on the Pixel phones too, because it seems that Google's not releasing or being maybe a little stubborn releasing the latest drivers for the devices for things like the radios, the Bluetooth, all that stuff. And so it's kind of slowing down the rate of development cycles for that GrapheneOS. I'm not sure about Calyx OS. I haven't ran it in a very long time, but I think it's affecting a lot of them. Probably will have trickle down to like Lineage and things of that nature. So I'm still remaining positive as I can be, because I rely on GrapheneOS probably just as much as Linux, if not more so, because it's my phone. It's what's with me every day. And I don't want to see this project run into any more hurdles than they've already had in the past. And so I'm hoping that they can continue improving upon GrapheneOS as opposed to playing catch up to the development for keeping the latest security updates and everything rolled out, but still remaining positive. I also want to give a shout out to Some Ordinary Guy. Quick little pro tip for those that use DuckDuckGo. I copied this from one of our Matrix chats a while back, and he says, "Hey guys, if you like DuckDuckGo, consider using the HTML version, which has zero trackers, and you can just go to html.duckduckgo.com. And he says, second pro tip, you can have two containers in Firefox, one for the normal DDG and one for the HTML DDG, and say use DDG AI in one and searches in the other. And I was like, it's actually pretty cool. So, just a pro tip on that. And again, the AI is making its way in everything, right? All search results. From a professional standpoint, it's kind of a nightmare. It looks like Google's trying to move slowly to their AI mode feature for Google results, which is just really killing the way Google search works. It's prioritizing. Anyway, it's a pay-to-play kind of thing, it appears. I'm not saying that de facto, but it's just doing a lot of research on that for professional reasons. But look to see a lot more AI summaries from sources rather than actually giving you links to sources, which is really all I ever want. And a lot of people ask me, Simon, what do you use for a search engine? I still use StartPage. I also have my own CirxNG instance that I use, but I find that sometimes I run into like rate limit issues here and there. So it's my secondary search. My primary is still StartPage. So yes, DuckDuckGo, Brave Search, I think some of these other things are pretty good, but I just still find the best consistent results for myself, especially when I'm searching things like errors, like if you're installing an application or installing something on your server and you get an error where you can just copy and paste, it seems that they do the best job at getting a clean result from the you know, from Google Search or Bing or wherever the source is coming from to give me the best link to fix my problem. So yeah, that's still kind of my default. But though I have been using Brave Search quite a bit lately, and it's been pretty good for me. Still, you know, kind of bouncing around. And then also, Fresh Veracity says, "Hey guys, after a month or so of using Brave, I caved and got back into old habits. Frowny face. So my current browser workflow is one Mulvad browser for general purposes, and I do like the Mulvad browser. I use that quite a bit. Second is LibreWolf, the fox eater, for logged accounts, where I have three profiles, one for personal, one for financial, and another one. And then number three, Firefox, the dirty old fox, strictly for work. And four, Mighty Tor for the odd YouTube cat video." Very, very good. Reasons, he says, I loved, he or she, I'm not really sure, Fresh Veracity. Reasons, I loved how smooth Brave is, but I miss the simplicity and portability of Firefox-based browser. Yeah, understandable. Easier to set up and harden, not so bloated, easy to copy and paste profile folders to another machine, wireless keeping all your settings. I found that you can copy slash paste Brave profiles folders, but not all settings remain. They reactivate telemetry and a bunch of few crappy things. I guess I will have a Brave browser ready to be fired up if something is broken on the other browser. So just a couple of cool little pro tips I wanted to include that were from the community. And I thought they were rather helpful and an interesting workflow that I've not actually considered before. So, you know, I've used browser compartmentalization for a long time between like work and personal stuff. And also even just compartmentalized machines entirely. So I have on my desk, I have a Mac on the left side, and on the right side, I have a PC running Linux. So I kind of can do both things at the same time. I have a really big desk, and it's a standing desk. It's actually where my podcast equipment is and everything. So it looks like kind of a little cluttered maybe, but it works for me. But it allows me to kind of keep my work stuff to my left and my personal stuff to my right. They're on different networks and everything. And I know that may be extreme. A lot of people probably just work on like one machine or maybe two. Totally get it. But I like physical compartmentalization, which is also why I have multiple phones, one for work, one for personal. I actually have a couple others because I'm always testing things. Actually, even still have a Pixel 3 that I'm still still active, even though it doesn't get any updates anymore because it's been long out of support. But I just love the phone. It's a Pixel 3a XL with the fingerprint scanner on the back. Still works. I don't use it. I use it as a test device. I don't use any for any personal stuff really because it is out of security updates. But it still works. It's running Graphene OS. Still chucks. And the phone still works. So it's kind of like, don't want to just like toss it. And yeah, so I don't know if that's really the answer for everybody, but you can also isolate things in containers, or if you're running Graphene OS, you can use multiple user profiles to separate your activities. So let's say you have an app that you use to track like your kids or something, or your dog or whatever. You can put that in an isolated container. You can even kill any SMS or phone access to it if you want. You can put it on its own separate VPN. Nothing in that container can see any other apps and any other profiles. Matter of fact, when you install an app to that profile from your owner profile, it has like been sanitized. So let's say you have Instagram installed in your owner profile. You, I would suggest not logging into the accounts on there, but you can disable that app in your owner profile. But now that app can be installed instantly with a toggle switch to any other user profile you have. So maybe you're logged in with your kid's profile to make sure they're not doing anything they shouldn't be doing. And you're like, I don't really want Instagram on my phone. Well, that's a way you could do it, right? I understand that things are nuanced. Not everyone can just live a dark life, gray man life, you know, off the grid and not have any apps and all that stuff. I understand that's not very practical, but you can still isolate these different apps into containers that don't have access to anything, any other data on your phone. You can set up storage scopes for it. So even if you do want to share maybe an image or photos or video on your on a social media platform or something like that, you can just share the files within that scope. So there's some really cool ways where you can still control and still participate and do the things that you want to do, but still have control over what it has access to do. It puts you back in the driver's seat as opposed to the default operating system telling you what to do or allowing you what to do. This is one of the reasons I just gripe with iPhones is that you can only install apps from the App Store. You can't install third party. You can't isolate anything. You can't break anything out. You're logged into the phone by default. You know, it's just like you can't. It's like you don't even own this phone. This $1,500, $1,200 phone, however much you spend on it, and it's not yours. It's Apple's. You just get the privilege of using it and paying the subscription fees. So, this kind of didn't really mean for this to turn into a rant, but I get so irritated with that kind of stuff, which is why I'm like, screw all this. I'm going to host everything. I'm going to manage everything. I don't care if I have to give stuff up. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. It's more important that I know what I'm giving up, that what I'm doing, and being back in the driver's seat. So, speaking of that, speaking of giving up information, this kind of story, this is the story I'm going to finish on, kind of ended up, not kind of, full blown ended up in a meme today. And I posted a couple videos in the Matrix chat probably an hour or two ago talking about this and wrote up a little synopsis and posted some videos. One was a 2-minute video. I might try to include those videos and just throw them in the show notes. One is a 2-minute and then another one is by Some Ordinary Gamer, not to be confused with Some Ordinary Guy from our Matrix chat. Some Ordinary Gamer is a popular YouTuber, Mudahar, who I just watched his video on this earlier and was laughing because of the irony, not laughing at the victims, but laughing at the irony. So the title is Women Dating Safety App Called T Breached Users' IDs Posted to 4chan. So there's an application that quickly became number one in the App Store. And it's just called T, as in the tea you drink, T-E-A. And I'm just going to read a little bit of the story so I don't flub it up. But users from 4chan claim to have discovered an exposed database hosted on Google's mobile app development platform, Firebase, belonging to the newly popular women's dating safety app called T. Users say they are rifling through people's personal data and selfies uploaded to the app and then posting that data online, according to screenshots, 4chan posts, and code reviewed by 404 Media. Now, let me stop for a second. T is an app that is for women only. And I haven't downloaded the app. I haven't really seen much other than just videos and screenshots because you have to prove that you're a woman by sending a selfie or your driver's license or ID to prove that you're a woman. Because the concept of the app is that you can basically rate men that you're interested in dated, or maybe didn't date due to some sort of red flag that you identified. And you can post photos of these men in the app. And then basically it kind of lets other women know who might have seen this person in one of their dating apps. They can come and check out. Inside the app, it allows you to do a background check on this person, get marital status, do criminal background stuff, sex offender registry on a map, all this kind of stuff. But the biggest thing about that, I mean, that there's a lot, you know, a lot of people can just go run a background check on somebody if they want to and pay for it. But what this does is it also allows the women to like rate the man and put comments in about the men and, you know, some of it could be true, not true. And I watched Mudahar's video and it's kind of like, you know, this is going to be an app full of scorned women. Like, no one's going to go rate a man positively, you know, like, oh, he was really great, but we just didn't work out, but you should totally date this guy. You know, it's like, I don't think that's what this app is used for. I think it's just basically, you know, a ranting kind of app, like, screw this guy or whatever. I don't like him. I don't know what I can only imagine, right? I can only imagine what's happening in this app. Well, the fact that you have to prove that you're a woman means you kind of have to KYC yourself, sort of, by taking a selfie or uploading a photo ID to prove that you're a woman. And allegedly, after 24 hours of proving that you are who you say you are, they delete this data because now you've proved it, so you're good, and now you can be on the platform and you can rant about all the men you've dated or why you didn't like this guy or whatever the case. Now, I think that safety in dating is important. I think that I really believe that people should be kind of like aware and be able to discern who they're dating and maybe even have some tools to do that. But this is a crowdsource kind of a thing, like rate men. And this is kind of wild to me. So let me read a little bit further into the article now that it kind of did a really crappy job of explaining what this app is. And it says the T as in the company, T confirmed the breach also impacted some direct messages, but said that the data is from 2 years ago. So apparently the direct messages of these women may be older. But T, which claims to have more than 1.6 million users, reached to the top of the App Store charts this week and has tens of thousands of reviews there. So they're reviewing men, like Yelp for restaurants, but they're men. The app aims to provide a space for women to exchange information about men in order to stay safe, and verifies that the new users are women by asking them to upload a selfie. Quote, yes, if you sent T app your face and driver's license, they doxed you publicly. No authentication, no nothing. It's a public bucket. A post on 4chan providing details of the vulnerability reads, driver's license and face pics, get the F in here before they shut it down. The thread says the issue was an exposed database that allowed anyone to access the material. While reporting the story, a URL the 4chan user posted included a voluminous list of specific attachments associated with the T app. 404 Media saw the list of files. In the last hour or so, that page was locked down and now returns permission denied error. So 404 Media verified that T does contain the same storage bucket URL that 4chan claims was related to the exposure. 404 Media did this by downloading a copy of the Android version of the app and decompiling its code. The 4chan post includes a photo of four women's driver's licenses that the 4chan user said they redacted, but comments in 4chan thread indicate that many more photos of T users have been exposed, with one person claiming they have downloaded thousands. We've also seen 4chan users share dozens of photos of women they claim they downloaded from the database, which all share the same image dimensions and file naming format we saw in the file that was exposed in the Google Firebase bucket. 404 Media did not load any images from the database itself. So from what I've also seen in other sources, like basically they web scraped this, right? So it wasn't like a hack. It was an exposed database that wasn't secured. And through some URL shenanigans, they were able to scrape the database and basically get a copy of it. And I've seen screenshots of tons of women's pictures and profiles and commentary. And if you go on YouTube and you just search for a T app or whatever, you'll probably find some entertaining videos. The source who flagged the 4chan thread about the T data to us said he attempted to flag the breach to Google before he reached out to 404 Media. The original thread is no longer available on 4chan itself, but 404 Media reviewed multiple archives of the page and another 4chan thread about the hack that was still alive at the time of writing the article. Quote, the images in the bucket are raw and uncensored. The user wrote, multiple users have created scripts to automate the process of collecting people's personal information from the exposed database, according to other posts in the thread, and copies of the scripts. And from what I've heard, there's multiple torrents of these going around. And I just kind of like, the reason, the funny part about this to me is just the irony that these women would sign up for an app, send selfies, send a driver's license, a copy of their driver's license to get on the app so they could use the app, to then secretly, because men are not allowed to go on and see if they're being, if there's anything libelous, because this is being printed about them, or defamed. I mean, some men are probably deserve it, but you know, you can't get on, right? It's just this, it's closed off. So you don't even have the ability to search, for something and file a takedown request. It's kind of odd, that it's set up the way it is, but the irony that the very app itself was web scraped and all the data dumped on the internet to expose these individuals, which sucks for the individuals, right? It's not funny that people's personal data got exposed. It's just funny that they would go on to expose other people. And again, I would imagine that a lot of these are bitter breakups. Ex-boyfriend, stay away from this guy, he's a jerk, whatever, so no one else will date him, rather than anyone going on to post positive reviews. So I'd imagine it's kind of a pretty toxic environment, probably entertaining to read. And then this happens to the site and to the app. It comes back to, and I've also read stories where men were able to fool the system by wearing drag, putting on wigs and uploading selfies. It wouldn't be that hard to maybe also get an aunt or mom or somebody to take a photo for you to, if you wanted to get on. Like, I mean, I just feel like the thing's kind of ridiculous the way that they do this. But what this is also kind of doing, in my opinion, is conditioning people to take a selfie and upload an ID to join a social app, right? And they didn't even have to do this because they needed to prove they were over like 13 or over a certain age. It was to prove that they were a specific gender to get on the app, which opens a whole nother ball of wax in a whole nother direction that we're not going to go down in this episode. But I'm like, 1.6 million people thought it was totally okay and that used the trust me bro, you believed in the trust me bro policy, privacy policy of we delete your data after 24 hours, just trust me bro, upload your ID. And then it's exposed in an open database, and probably an S3 bucket, I think is probably what it was, or something like that, something similar to that, where someone crafty enough to write a Python script basically can just pull all the data and drop it online. It's like, I ad nauseum, I've discussed this type of thing where it's like, feed as much misinformation as you can. If you want to use an app, I understand. Use an email alias. Use a fake name. Say you live in a different city. Don't use your real birth date. Try to create as many breaks in association to your real identity. Use a VPN. Don't just use your home internet connection because your IPs get logged and, you know, these things get correlated, mostly for advertising purposes. But the more hurdles that you can put up, the harder it is for these things to affect you. So if you're part of an app or a social network or whatever, assume that at some point something's going to get breached and data is going to be exposed. But if your data is junk data, then you don't have as much to worry about. And they can't correlate an email address that you only used once using an email alias to any other online identity that you would have, because you'd only use that email address and hopefully that unique password there. And if you're not sure how to use unique passwords, just go look up how to use a password manager. KeePassXC is a great one. Bitwarden is probably my second top of the list. Those are the two that I use and have used for a very long time. And those help you keep track of all your logins, and it helps you come up with unique passwords for every single login that you create online. So, again, I guess everyone who's listening to this is probably, most people who listen to me are probably familiar and come here to just hear the shenanigans and feel like you're not alone. And I appreciate you. I really do. And this is a perfect example that dropped today. And it was kind of serendipitous because I was planning and hoping to get a recording out today because I'm busy tomorrow and then I'm flying out Sunday and I won't be back. And, I just wanted to get it out. And this story fell in my lap. It's just like, how crazy is this? It's not that crazy. It's really not. So So yeah, that's just another example. There's so many different methods to protect yourselves with, you know, using better email options that you pay for. Tuta Mail is a great one that I use. Proton Mail, a great email provider. I use both. And using an email alias and using a password manager and not giving out any real information anytime ever. Using pseudo phone numbers. There's a ton of different ways you can do that. These are things that I'm going to delve into a little bit deeper down in upcoming episodes. In addition to having some guests on, in addition to also talking about some of my strategies for my current Proxmox server setup, which is basically a hypervisor that allows me to run virtual machines and Docker images within those machines on one system and be able to serve multiple purposes and just kind of get a little fancier with my setup. And that's pretty much all I have. Thanks for listening. Thanks for all the support. Thank you for those who have actually reached out to me and asked, like, hey, are you okay? Is everything good? Is the podcast still on? Is it still a thing? Yes, it's still a thing. I'm not Irish goodbying on you. I'm not pulling Michael Bazell. Not that I would compare myself to the GOAT. But no, if I ever do leave, I would definitely have a farewell. But that's not what's happening here. So I am 100% committed to this project, and we'll get back into the swing of things. I want to also get something set up maybe within the first couple weeks of August to have a hangout again in the Matrix, or we could set up a web chat or something like what did we use before? Jitsi. I think we used Jitsi in the past just to hang out and talk and get some of you on the podcast as well that I've reached out and I've been talking to. So yeah, thanks for hanging in there with me. Just thanks for hanging in there with me. I appreciate you all, and I will catch you in the next one. Okay. They can never keep me down, I'm going. And if I ever fail, just know I'll go again. I never quit, cause I know that every loss may lead to another win. I'm going up. I bet when I land, they gon' tell me it's luck again. See that I'm winning, it's harder to watch. I'm setting the stage, you should give me my prize. You ain't got a soul, you lacking the spirit. You talk out your neck, I'ma show you I'm with it. I've been really hoping you to sit and watch me win again and win again and win.